I just want you to know that I'm sorry.
What's up, everyone?
What's up, bitches?
What's up? How'd everybody do today?
You know, I had nothing exciting going on. I worked this morning, and I've been fighting. I have the Aura ring. Do you know what the...
What? You know, I seen it on, I think it was TikTok or Facebook. I had seen something about it, and I looked it up. I'm like, that shit's expensive as fuck.
Yeah. It's worth it, though.
Is it?
Yeah, it measures your biometrics and stuff. And I woke up this morning. I had shit for sleep. I went to bed at a normal time, but I had shit for sleep because I was running a fever last night and my fucking ring caught it. And I woke up at like between 2:30 and 3 o'clock this morning, literally fucking hacking my brains out. Hacking? Yacking.
I was coughing or throwing up?
No,
which one?
I was throwing up. Oh. I was throwing up.
Okay.
And yeah, I didn't feel, I'm not one to throw up. I didn't feel good today. And then, but I still had to go to work because I'm on this damn contract and I have to do 12 hours of extra overtime a week. So I'm working 52 hours a week for the past 7 years. And 12 years
it's
later.
Been, what, like 70, you're going on 70 days, aren't you?
I'm at week.
Week nine?
No. How many? It's 12 weeks. Yeah, I just finished week 9.
Yeah.
Did we learn our lesson?
Yeah, I'm tired.
She's not taking any more contracts.
Yeah, I'm not.
That's the last
contract.
No, like mentally, like my mental health and my physical health is just, I know it doesn't sound like a lot because people are like, oh, it's like 52 hours. I've done 70 and 80 a week, which I totally get. Props to you. Absolutely. But like, it's mentally draining.
Mm-hmm. And you've also had what, like 4 days off all total in the past 9 weeks?
Yeah. I'm tired, bro. So I'm not feeling good. So anyway, my point being is that I still had to go to work. So when I came home before we recorded this episode, I tried to take a nap and my heart is still pounding out of my chest. So I only slept for 17 minutes, but I was laying in bed for 3 hours.
Love that for you.
So here we are. That's what I did today. What did you do today?
So listen, okay. So Eric and I always pass this place because we went to go to Starbucks to get coffee, right? Mm-hmm. And next to Starbucks is like, there's a Dollar Tree, right? And a lot of the food trucks will go and sit over there in Bayside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a food truck here that's in like Brevard County and it's called Juicy Buns.
She ate ass today.
I did not eat ass today. It was delicious.
Wait, are they there all the time?
They're there normally on the weekends for sure that I see them. Now they're supposedly moving from there and they're going to the ABC Liquor, like in Melbourne, I think is where they're going.
On Babcock.
They sure are.
Yeah.
But, they make gourmet burgers, right? And Eric and I have been talking probably for the past like 4 or 5 months about stopping there. And every time we're like, oh yeah, next time we'll go. So today we go get coffee and I'm like, you know what? Go that way. And he's like, go which way? And I was like, go to Dollar Tree. He's like, do we need some at Dollar Tree? And I was like, just go in the parking lot.
Do what the fuck I told you to do.
And so we go there and he's like,
oh. She wears the pants if you haven't noticed.
No, I was just surprising him with it. That's all. Okay. So we go there and we go up to the thing. Now, first off, this food truck's massive. Like I felt like I was tiny. Okay, because literally like my eye level was under the thing and Eric's like throwing his hands up on top and he's like, you'll take. And I, like, the whole time I'm like, I feel so small over here. But yeah, they make gourmet burgers and they have like all different types like that are like completely different than just like your normal place, right? So I ended up getting the beer cheese cheeseburger. Oh my God.
What was on it?
So it was, normally comes on a pretzel bun, okay? But they didn't have any pretzel buns, they were out. So he gave it to me on a brioche bun. So it was the brioche bun. It had the, what's it called? The spicy bacon jam on it.
Mm.
And then it had the burger. And then it had some, like, it was a different type of mayonnaise. I think there might have been some sriracha or some of the mayonnaise. But then it also had, like, beer cheese, like, poured all over it. And then it had lettuce and pickles. And just, like, it was loaded, right?
Dude.
It was the juiciest, but yet best burger I've ever had in my whole entire life.
Juicy.
Like
buns.
We've gotten burgers. Like we went to go like Squid Lips or some of the other places and nothing compares to, I know Squid Lips. It just sounds weird. But juicy buns and Squid Lips. But no, like we go, like whenever
sounds
we go
like out, you would call your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh,
that bitch has some Squid Lips.
Yeesh.
She squirted ink all the time.
You made me ink.
Yeah, so it was really, really
I love good. That for you. Anything that has like any burger or anything that has bacon jam on it.
It had bacon too. Like a thick cut bacon.
Oh, I like thick cut bacon.
Dude, I'm telling you, you would be in love with this fucking cheeseburger.
Dude. It sounds like clogged arteries and
it was.
Diabetes.
I left a review, one, but I was like 10 out of 10.
I want it every day. Thank you.
10 out of 10. I will risk my cholesterol for this.
I fucking love that. I love that you're so excited about this.
It was so good. Because you know what? It was that buildup of wanting to go and not going. And then finally, after months of like, oh, we should stop and going. It was amazing. Eric got a hot Cheeto one. And literally, they like did like crunched. Remember like we went to the fair and they did those cheesy corn dogs?
Oh, yeah. You guys got those Korean.
The hot Cheeto Korean corn dogs. Yeah.
We still need to go to that place. Remember you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. Up in Vieira.
Yeah.
There's like, it's like called Mochi Nut or something like that.
Mochi what?
Oh, that's juicy buns and squid lips. We got
it. And Mochi Nut.
It, they do like the Korean style corn dogs and the mochi donuts and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Yes, bitch.
So we should all go. Absolutely. It's in Vieira.
But why haven't we gone yet?
I don't know.
When have we had time recently?
I didn't even know about it.
This is true.
Oh, I thought you heard me and her talking about it one day.
Negative.
Oh, sorry. We left you out of the conversation.
Sorry.
Cut out.
I'm
just kidding. Yeah, no, I definitely want to go to that.
Yeah.
I'm so down.
So down. We need to schedule that soon.
Liz? What did you do today?
I navigated being on new medication.
Mm.
Yeah, because we all know I have ADHD or ADD or all the D's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have it all.
D's nuts.
D's nuts. So for the first time in my life, I am on Adderall.
Uh-huh. How's that make you feel? Because
Focused.
Focused.
Very focused.
Focused. Laser like focused. Laser focused. Like I'm like, yeah, let's go get this done. I got to, you know, we got to run. And my body's wanting to run. And my lungs are like, bitch, slow the fuck down. remember your place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but like, I feel like, yeah.
I just caught that out of the corner of my eye. She's got this little keychain from the light that just scared the shit out of me. All of a sudden, I see it moving behind me and I'm like, oh.
It's because you're jiggling. You're jiggling your juicy buns.
My juicy buns. Do you like it though? Do you feel like you can like conquer the world?
I don't know about all that. I mean, it's not speed.
So. Well, I mean, it's an
not
amphetamine.
Not that I've ever done speed, but you know. Huh?
I mean, it's an amphetamine.
Yeah.
So like, kinda.
Yeah, but I feel like it's like the Tylenol of amphetamines.
It's like a Percocet of the amphetamines,
that's
I
fine.
Feel.
We can go with that.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah. It's like the lower end.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway.
I'm proud of you.
We're doing it.
I feel like you needed that. Do you think that it's going to help your like your overall mental health and well-being?
No, I think it's just going to get me more accomplished. Accomplished in doing things. Yeah. Sorry, like it makes my brain even speak faster than my words coming out of my mouth are.
I know that feeling.
And it happens like when I'm not on my medication,
so this is just amplifying it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm having like a stroke all in one.
Oh,
So it's only day two. I have to let my body get used to it
for sure.
We'll see at work, because if I'm running around the ER, I'm gonna get Heelys, so I can just pop my wheel out and just like. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's what I should do. I'm over here
transporter?
Looking at
you. Should. Can you imagine?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I'm gonna be wheeling people down like, as in their wheelchairs, like
no. She's gonna be doing it when she transports the dead bodies to the morgue.
You can fuck
she
off.
Whoosh, whoosh.
You just see the fucking gurney just flying.
That just reminds me of, like Back to the Future.
Yeah, absolutely
out.
Not.
Out. Oh my god, could you imagine, dude? What would be really? This is about to be morbid.
Listen, you know I'm what? Already struggling with the part that I have to take dead bodies to the morgue.
I mean, I get that. I get that. So all I just thought of in my brain was you wearing Heelys and you have to take those because they have the little plastic tarp type thing over it, right? You in the Heelys getting off the elevator and then your Heely gets stuck in the elevator and then you just face plant
onto the gurney.
Yeah.
Onto the what you transfer. Her face.
That is what nightmares are made out of. Okay, you already had me going. Like I'm not even joking. Like this whole, what'd you call him, Alan?
Yeah.
Who's Alan?
Okay, so listen, right? Like, I'm telling her, I'm like, yeah, I went to like the Gurney graveyard and shit. And that place is freaky as fuck on the B side, right? Because literally there's one light in there that just and flickers the whole time, right? And I'm like, it's dark in there. And then you just have this one flickering light. I'm like, I feel like I just entered into like The Conjuring. Okay.
It is. It's all the spirits entering and leaving the hospital.
And she goes, you'll get touched. And I go, excuse me. And I'm like, what kind of touching are we talking about in the Gurney graveyard, right?
I am straight faced. I am acting like I'm like totally serious. Okay. I was actually proud of myself.
Yeah, I was actually really proud of you too, because I still believe it. So
that's the worst part. Oh, I really truly do.
Because she's like, yeah, you're going to get touched. And I go, what do you mean touch? She goes, like, on the shoulder. Like, you'll feel like a hand on your shoulder. And I go, what? And she goes, yeah, it's Alan. We call him Alan. And I go, who is Alan? She goes, I'm sure just a spirit that died at the hospital. And she goes, but he's really nice. Like, he'll mess with you a little bit. Like, he'll touch you or whatever. But that's about it. And I'm like, she's like, no, I'm just kidding. And I was like, no, you're not.
No, I am, though.
No, you
know
what's
fucked up? Wait a second. Do you know what's fucked up?
What?
We have a volunteer at the hospital.
His name is Alan.
And his name is Alan. And he's an older guy.
Is that the seven? The one that works 7 days a week?
Super, super, super sweet.
Yes. I was talking to Julio about it. And he was telling me that he is literally like, he's just such an old, good soul.
He is.
And he goes, he literally works 7 days a week, never takes a day off.
Yes.
And I go, that's crazy. And then he goes, he was talking about it. And I go, well, you know what? He probably does that because he's in his 80s, has nothing else to do. And he goes, I tell him all the time, he needs to just take a day off. And I go, this is probably why he does it, is because he feels needed. Yeah. And he goes, that's exactly what he told me, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, as you get older.
You will encounter Alan, and he is the nicest soul you'll ever.
He wears a fanny pack.
He does.
He really.
And he wears his little, his white Velcro shoes.
Yeah.
And they're like high top.
He's
super cute. And he does this little shuffle when he walks.
He does.
Think of like the dude from Up, the old man from Up.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Except he doesn't have the glasses.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have the round bulbous nose.
No.
No, but he's so
stinking sweet. And he's so stinking cute. And you just can't help but like when you see him, be like, hey, Alan. He's like, how you doing, sweetheart?
I know.
You're just like, oh, okay.
I know.
Anyway, love him. So shout out to Alan.
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, if he were, he would be our ghost to the hospital.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I hope he lives many more years.
Yes. No, he will. He will, but I'm just saying, like, I think that he would find his purpose there.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, he's so sweet.
Yes, I've heard that. I can't wait to meet him, actually.
Yeah, he's very sweet.
All right, well, now that we've gone on for nonsense minutes.
Hello,
here.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning. How is everyone out there in
the world?
We're just fucking around.
We are.
Until we find out.
Yeah. FAFO, baby.
I don't want to fuck around and find out.
I have too many times in my life. It's not good.
No.
It's not.
We're talking about attachment styles this week.
We are. Yes, we are.
And all the things that comes with attachment styles.
Yeah. Mm.
It's real. We're going to get real.
We're going to get real today because Valerie's already spiraling.
Dude. No, fuck that though. Because I understand the reasoning. Like, I get what you're reasoning. Okay. But it just still don't make any sense. And I'm not going to go into it because I'm pretty sure that this motherfucker listens. Fine. Love that, but we're gonna move forward and not spiral. We're gonna use our tactics that we learned.
I'm very proud of you.
As adults.
I'm very proud of you in this moment.
Thank you.
You could have called a motherfucker out real quick.
Oh, I could have.
And you chose not to because of what?
You know what?
We call this healing.
This is healing. That's what we're gonna fucking talk about. So speaking of attachments.
All right, you know what? Let's just go about this way. So as we're diving into attachment styles.
Because we about to dive in.
We're going to drag our inner child into this a little bit. Put our inner child on the spotlight and say, who the fuck did this to you?
Who? Well, that's easy.
That is easy for most. But some people that haven't done their research or really gone through in their healing process may have not realized where all of their baggage may come from.
I mean, this is very true.
Right. So that's why we're going to go over how it's formed. We're going to go over how it still shows up in our love lives today. Mm-hmm. We're going to go over a little bit of all of it, how it affects our friendships and so forth and relationships and all that stuff. So
there is about three main ones. So we got anxious, preoccupied. We have fearful, avoidant, and we have dismissive, avoidant.
Right. There's technically four, but secure attachment. But
correct.
Your three insecures. That's what we're going over.
That's right.
Yes.
Question.
Sure.
What would your toxic trait be in a group chat with your exes. Ow!
Like with all of them. Stop hitting yourself. Jesus Christ. Like all of them?
This is a very unhinged episode. I'm sorry. Yeah, like if you made a group chat with your exes, like all of them, what would your toxic trait be? Because I have some ideas.
I would just fucking drop a selfie with no context, like in a big ass group chat, right? Just remind them what they fumbled and then log out. Block them all.
Mic drop. Bye-bye.
Oh gosh. I think I'm going into it and going, I'm psychoanalyzing. Then I'm gonna ask them all of their zodiac signs.
Keyword psycho.
Psycho. Okay. Right? I'm psychoanalyzing, asking them all of their zodiac signs. I'm then gonna go into what's your love language, just so I can track who neglected me and go, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
I could see you do that.
100%. Absolutely.
That tracks.
That tracks. It absolutely tracks.
What would you do?
Clock it.
Clock it. You can't see her, but she's doing the little fingers right now.
I probably would just walk in and be like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
You're cool.
You're cool. You can go fuck yourself. And then walk out.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, that would be me wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense. That 100% makes sense, you doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to... Yeah. You fumbled me. Cool. I hope your life sucks. Bye. I hope your life sucks. That's peace be with you, and also with you. That's what,
yes, Father.
Forgive me, for I have sinned.
Oh my God.
Every single night.
Okay, so wait, I got a question.
What?
What's the wildest thing your attachment style ever made you text at 2 a.m.?
Mm. Oh my God. Long drawn out paragraphs of how I'm so worth it.
Why don't you love me?
Why don't you love me? You haven't answered me in 17 minutes. Or I'm calling back to back to back to back to back. Now, mind you, I'm just, hold on, pause. This was old me.
Yes. You've gotten a lot better.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a psycho.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue. I had to just say that because I sound really crazy.
Ooh,
what?
No. I gotta breathe. Okay. Anyways. See, I would probably be the one that'd be like, listen, I just want to let you know I don't need you, but also, do you ever think about me? Like, no, okay, cool, same. Like, and then I'd go on to Facebook and start posting, and TikTok posting like soulmate shit and fucking the songs that like help me, like heal me through it, because songs are my love language.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's the songs and like the passive aggressive songs and the passive aggressive memes.
Right. Yeah. Now I'm gonna say the same thing. That would have been past me, because yeah, I don't do that shit no more.
Nope.
I'm happy. Nope. And everything is good,
so. Exactly. That shit's fucking funny to look back at. What's yours, toxic?
I'm 100% toxic. I have no shame in my game. I will freely admit it, that I've sent it quite a few times at between the hours of 2 and 3, to be honest. Hey, big head, you up?
No.
100%. And then they start talking to me and I fall asleep.
Liz!
And then I get a text the next day.
Hello.
Is everything good? I'm like,
everything's what? Great.
That ship has sailed,
it's
bro. Gone.
It's around the corner. You should go find somebody else.
You really? You?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
You said, hey, hey, big head.
Hey, big head. Hey, big head.
Are we talking the one upstairs or downstairs? You know what? Don't answer that.
The one he's using at that moment.
Oh, well. Wait,
what?
Oh.
Oh. Also, let's go ahead and say that was past me.
Yes.
I have grown.
You have. We all have.
That's my ass is asleep by 11:30. Proud some nights you. Earlier, okay, because like, no. Prevents. Ain't nobody got time to be up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
No.
People unless I'm going pee. Jobs. Yeah.
Oh, unless you're going pee. We are getting older.
We are getting older, and I can't hold it like I used to.
Oh, no.
Also, I'm blind, and seeing my phone at that early, like that time in the morning, I'm like, what?
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Don't feel it.
What?
You don't feel it. You're awake until like 5:30 in the morning.
No, I'm talking about when I wake up.
Oh.
Yeah, when I wake up, I'm like, fuck that.
I feel that. And I'm like, what?
No, no, I'm saying like in the morning time when I wake up, or after, whatever is morning time for me. Okay.
We're just going to go 7:30
at night. That is false, actually. Okay. I listen.
When's the last time you slept?
I slept last night.
For how many hours?
Actually, a lot.
You did sleep a lot because you said you went to bed at 1 and you finally texted me back at 11:30. So 10 and a half
like
hours.
Yeah, like my body was like, okay, bitch, you've been living on 2-3 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
It's time for coma.
Yeah, like, exactly. And you needed that.
That's bad. What I do, though. I will go from like no sleep, like averaging 2 to 4 hours a day. And then from there, I'll then go into where after like a good 9-10 days of that, I'll go into like an 8 to 10 hour sleep.
This is not sponsored when I say this, but this is why you need the Aura ring. Because it tracks your cardiovascular age.
Okay, let's not do that.
So does Jesus, right. And he's helping me. So
you know what my problem would be? Is I'd become such a big fucking hypochondriac with that ring on my finger.
Why?
Because.
Or, which, hold on, pause. Or you can go the complete opposite and realize, okay, I'm actually healthy.
I guarantee it's going to be the latter of the other way around.
You know that's what
I
mean? Your panic. Like,
yes.
You're but, talking to the queen of WebMD over here.
Yeah, this is true.
Listen, no, I first need WebMD. Give me some fucking credit. Okay. Like, I
use Dr. Google over here.
No, ChatGPT. ChatGPT and like NIH. Okay?
Oh, my bad.
Oh, I'm proud of you for using NIH.
I do. That's 90% of the one I actually use. I don't normally ChatGPT anything when it comes to health related shit.
Proud of you. That's Thanks. A great job. You're seen, you're heard, you're validated.
She thinks she's fucking funny.
She's fucking hilarious over here.
I'm not the one that needs that thing.
Oh my god. Ow.
Oh my god. Do you need help getting that? That knife out?
Yeah, really. That was right in the back.
Dagger.
In between I the love
you.
Blades.
I'm proud of you. It's okay.
My rock eyebrow is coming up. It's my one right eyebrow. You see it?
It's beautiful. I'm no sure one... nobody else here can see it. So I apologize. She's asking if you can see it.
Move forward.
Let's move forward.
Yes. You know what, bitches? Since we're all in this kind of playful, giddy questionnaire thing.
Yeah.
How about you describe your love life using only fast food slogans?
Arby's, we have the meats.
Oh, hands down. That was the quickest fucking answer ever.
I'm going to go with eat fresh.
Subway. What's yours?
Or $5 foot long. One of the two. I'll choose both. Eat fresh with a $5
foot long. It depends on which ex you're talking about.
I don't think.
Oh, I was talking about my current life. Okay.
Wow. You know what? Good job, Eric. $5 though? That's crazy.
It's free for me.
Oh, cheap ass.
I'm loving it. Okay.
I'm going to go with Hardee's. Eat it like you mean it.
Oh, you know what? That's good for you, lesbian. That's good.
I thought you would go with KFC, finger liquor good.
Oh.
I mean, we go either way. We just don't eat juicy buns.
We don't
eat. Oh, I eat juicy buns.
No juicy
you
buns for me.
Would.
Thank
you. No. You would. Yeah. Also, I think mine would also have to be Burger King, have it your way, because I used to have no boundaries. So whatever you wanted, you had it. You got it. It's great. That's have it great. Your way.
I'm glad that you've moved on from Burger King because it's garbage.
That's true.
That's true. Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I do like Chick-fil-A.
Me too. Anyways, so let's move on.
My pleasure.
Listen to our listeners. I just want to say, listen, okay? I am really sorry because I feel like we are all not in the right headspace today. We have one that's spiraling, one that's cracked out, and then I'm just kind of in the middle just trying to figure where the fuck I play in. Okay, so if this is a crazy episode, I do apologize.
Oh, because seriously, fuck that shit. Like, I'm so annoyed at it. Speaking of spiraling, we're going to be talking about attachment styles. So if you spiral, if you overthink when people aren't texting you, if you ghost when someone's too close for your own comfort, or you just simply think that sitting at home with a sippy cup full of whiskey and a weighted blanket is your idea of a fucking date night, this episode might be for you.
Yes,
uh-huh. I agree. And in case you may have forgotten. Because we did. I'm Val.
I'm Liz.
I'm Jess.
Clearly, we don't know who each other is. Like, it's fine. It's fine. Well,
all right. So, why don't you explain my life. What attachment theory is?
Oh man! In a nutshell, attachment theory is like the blueprint of your nervous system. So we form attachment ideals starting from ages 0 to 2.
Correct.
So that's kind of like where you get the is love safe? How do I get my needs met without losing connection? So it's formed, this theory was whole formed by John Bowlby. He's a psychologist and psychoanalyst. And he wanted to know the relationship with children and their caregivers. So, and he wanted to kind of learn how they kind of all intertwined and how they respond to stress when there's like a separation from the kid and the parent. So he partnered with Mary Ainsworth. And they did a study called the strange situation theory. So they observed toddlers when the mother left the room. So these toddlers pretty much showed what type of attachment style they were when the parents or the mother left the room. So secure attachment children, they would be okay when they came back.
right? And they would just welcome the mother back in. The anxiously attached would start crying like, oh my God, you left me, and then be comforted by that person. The fearful avoidant, they were the one to go, they were apprehensive to meet the mother again. And then the dismissive, just they showed no reaction. So this by no means was a personality test at all. It was just to show
the type of attachment.
The type of attachment. That's exactly it. So I do want to make it known that these aren't fixed or unchangeable. So even though, yes, they're kind of wired into you for your nervous system when you're younger, it can be fixed. So it's not about blame, and it's just awareness and truth. And you're not dramatic for thinking that you have any of these at all, because we're literally talking about how your nervous system learned to survive love, and you can learn to unlearn it.
Absolutely. And I think what it comes down to is, so there's ways that they're formed, right? Mm-hmm. And how they like show up in being formed, right? And that's what I kind of want to go over in the same aspect, because through that it will show, because everybody has one form of attachment or multiple forms of attachment that they have through these. But you are one of the four.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no in between. You are going to be one of the four. And with it being either you have a secure attachment, or you have an anxious attachment, or you have a dismissive avoidant attachment, or a fearful avoidant. You're one of those fours, and you can have traits in some of the other ones as well. And then if you're able to work on that, and that's through the process of what we're trying to currently do ourselves, that's when you start to realize like, oh, wow, I can become earned secure attachment. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing. But again, like you were saying, it is started from childhood, right? From that 0 to 2 age. And what they noticed how it was formed was based off of this. So like with secure attachment, the caregivers were normally consistent. They were warm. They were responsive and emotionally there for the children, right? And through that, the message to the children or the child that they had received was, I'm safe, I'm loved, and my needs matter, right? Mm-hmm. So they had found out that with anxious attachment, the caregivers may have been inconsistent. Now, with inconsistent, it can be solely even just based off the fact of like you had two loving parents that were there for you, and but your parents worked all the time. Mm-hmm. And as a child, that rewires your brain to go, oh, they're not always here. They're not always around for me. So in that, it would make the child feel like, okay, sometimes I'm feeling like I'm nurtured, and other times I'm feeling I'm neglected, right? Mm-hmm. And it made them more hyper aware. So in that hyper aware, they feel like they had to get their needs met. They had to kind of like almost earn it, right? So their like message,
to perform.
Right, absolutely. So their message to themselves that they received was, love is unpredictable. I have to earn it or cling to it so it doesn't leave, right? With avoidant attachment, which is the dismissive avoidant. This one's a little bit different because the caregivers were most likely emotionally unavailable. A lot of times it comes from them having their own issues and them dealing with their own problems and so forth, which cause them to be a little bit more emotionally unavailable for their own children. In that process, they were probably dismissive or expected the children to like show independence at a younger age than they should have, right? So that emotional need of feeling ignored gave the child the message that depending on others feels unsafe, right? I have to take care of myself and not show my emotions. And then you have the most complex one, and that's fearful avoidance. So in that not poor things, just a part of life, right? So in those, the caregivers may have been a source of both fear and comfort. And a lot of times with this one, it could have been you either had one parent that was super loving and the other parent that was either an user, right? An alcoholic, a drug addict, something of the sort. And they would go from being very loving to very rageful, to loving to rageful. So in that, causing a lot of neglect or trauma in those children, I don't know why I can't speak today. I apologize. My children. The message a child received was, love is scary, love is confusing. They didn't know if they were safe or if they were wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where a lot of that comes from.
So honestly, like, let's talk about how they show up in adulthood.
Yeah, man.
Like in your everyday relationships, family, friends, love relationships, your money, your career, like whatever you got going on. So with like a secure attachment, you're comfortable with closeness and you're very independent. You have super healthy communication and you trust in your relationships. However, in anxious attachment styles, you have fear of abandonment. You are needing constant reassurance. You have emotional highs and lows, and you overthink to the extreme. Whereas in an avoidant attachment, you struggle with vulnerability. You have detachment in relationships. You shut down when there's any kind of conflict. And you need space.
100% sounds like you.
That's fucking rude. feel called out like a motherfucker.
You know, we love you. It's all, listen, the anxious, I was going to say it with her too. That is 100% her.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what we're all right, healing. So go ahead and call me out now.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and we'll talk about, yep.
Yep.
Come on.
Call me out.
Go ahead.
Fuck. I'm trying to be mean to you and I can't.
That's okay.
I like you on Adderall. Go ahead.
Fuck you all.
Damn.
All right. So fearful. Little Miss Fearful over there. You have the push-pull dynamic. You have craving of love, but fearing of the intimate.
Yep. Intimacy.
There's that word. Intimacy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. That's what she meant, guys.
I know.
I did. I just... God, fucking stuttering Stanley over here.
She's stuttering through stuttering.
Fucking stroking out.
I just want to let you know that our slogan for our podcast is oversharing so you don't have to. Here it is. This is therapy, but us. Go.
All right, everybody. Let's follow along here.
Sorry.
We have high emotional reactivity and you self... sabotage. Does that sound familiar, Jessica?
Me? Never.
No. And deep mistrust.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I know.
Deep.
I know. I did. I do. Ish. I did ish. Do ish. It's a deduce situation.
A deuce?
A douche. A douche.
We call them pure wicks. Okay.
Oh, no.
Pure wicks. Those things are nasty. Okay, I just real quickly, because I know that we are laughing and this is not a joking matter as we're talking about it, but I think all three of us are just so emotionally drained with life right now.
Yeah.
And we've got one that's spiraling, as we stated before, and everything else, and lack of sleep, and just, I think it's a little mixture of everything. So we're trying to get through this episode and the time frame that we have to do it.
And also, we know that you guys like to hear us banter and talk shit to each other and laugh. Because who likes a serious podcast all the time?
Amen.
And we need to laugh through our healing.
Amen.
So we're teaching you how to, we're giving you tools in life how to laugh through the pain.
Here's my thing. We're giving you exactly what it looks like.
Raw. Unfiltered.
Like real. Legit unfiltered.
Just paused a little bit.
I mean, my brain will catch up eventually. All of our brains.
Eventually. I'm keeping that.
No.
Eventually. Hey, yeah, if I had to stumble through my whole thing, we get to peep mentally.
It's true. It's true. That reminds me of the Chris Brown song.
What?
There was a Chris Brown song back in like 2007, maybe 8.
So it's pre or post Rihanna?
It's pre Rihanna.
During.
When he was younger. No, it's pre Rihanna. He says a tentin.
A tentin.
Like the broken promise. Song?
No.
Get a little tired of your broken promises.
Oh, I forgot the lyrics in that song. It's the ambulance. Somebody called the ambulance and something, a tentin. Yeah, he doesn't say, like, and you can never unhear it.
I can honestly say I don't think I know that Chris Brown song.
Me either. That's okay, though.
That's weird.
Oh, man.
She's going to find it later tonight and text us at 2 a.m.
It is. That's going to be our 2 a.m. text. I found the song, guys.
That is... No. Because my mind doesn't go quiet. Okay, continue. God bless, man.
My goodness. All right, so why don't we go over the three insecure attachment styles?
All right, so we will go first because I'm the anxious one of the bunch. So we're going to talk not about... You. No, yes, me.
Because I'm just really confused on why she said we.
Yeah, we.
Like, she's got
multiple personalities.
What?
You're like, we will go first.
You and one army over there.
Did I really?
Yeah. You did.
She needs sleep.
Oh my God, I'm so tired.
Go ahead, we.
All right, so we're going to talk about anxious attachment and how it often gets super misfucking understood. So people tend to label us really too much or too clingy or too needy. But let me be real with you. I promise you it's not about you being needy. It's really about survival. Like, at the end of the day, that's all it is. So, anxiously attached people, honestly, where it starts is that they often grow up, like you said, like with warmth and love, mm-hmm. right? So they have parents who are in and out of the house. They're working long hours. But also with that is paired with inconsistency, truly. So maybe their parents were also emotionally unavailable at times too.
Right.
You know, that could also be a thing. They had love that was given to them, but it was always taken away. So it kind of created that inconsistency and confusion and fear. Because, like I said, it was a nervous system response. So when they're caregivers, they pull away. It also becomes like a trauma response in their nervous system. And they learn to associate connection with anxiety and survival with approval.
which that's fucking terrible. So that's why now as adults, when people pull away, it's not just emotional for us. It's literally a full-blown nervous system reaction.
Right.
So core wounds of this, I want to kind of talk about that because it's super important to realize what the core wounds of that is. So it's a lot of deep abandonment issues, super sensitive to rejection, panic when any partner pulls away, craving of love so deeply that sometimes accidentally gets people pushed away.
Right.
Because it's uncomfortable for them, right?
By the reaction.
Absolutely. So it's a full body alert that says, if I don't fix this right now, I'll lose everything. When people like sit there and say they pull away or they need space or there's an issue. And if you feel that you don't fix that, and how many fucking times in my life have I gone, I need to just talk it through. Can we just talk it through?
Yeah.
Because immediately it's like, you're going to abandon me if we don't fix this, right? So there is a deep need to have self-regulation. But anxious people have a very hard time with that. So core needs, we'll talk about core needs of that. They need validation.
You're doing a great job. You're
doing a great job. You are validated. You are seen.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Reassurance, consistency, certainty. They need encouragement to be seen, to be heard, to be supported. And love language, guess what? Guess what you think their love language is?
For anxious,
yeah,
I'm gonna say physical touch.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Mm-hmm.
Physical touch, and also I would also say it would be like the reassurance portion of it, of like words, the constant, of affirmation. Yeah, words of affirmation.
Yep,
100%.
Absolutely.
But I do have to say that like we're not all bad, because our superpowers, we're kind, we're sweet, we're loving, we're thoughtful, we're focused on others. We spend a lot of time thinking about you and how we can help you and not ourselves. We're very warm and generous and emotionally present and very deeply supportive people, because we don't want to ever feel like we're invoking the abandonment wounds onto others that we feel ourselves.
Right.
So because our subconscious tends to focus on others, the casualty really becomes the relationships with ourselves.
Right.
We deprioritize our own needs. We don't speak up. And then we end up falling into people-pleasing behaviors, which is terribly toxic to us. So this is why it's hard to self-soothe. We don't know how to meet our own needs because we're trained to rely on others for emotional regulation. So when other people aren't available, guess what we do? We spiral and we panic.
Right, because you need other people to self-soothe.
Absolutely. And we didn't learn that. Like, that wasn't a core thing that we learned.
You're wired that way.
Absolutely. So when the caregiver was in there, like when our parents were in there and they're giving us love, they were soothing us in that moment, but then they left again. And guess what? The only comfort was that parent coming back.
Right, because the conditioning was basically accept the love while it's there and then hope for it's going to come back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that created a pattern. We're scared of abandonment, that we abandon ourselves. We push our own needs and our goals to the back burner. We take on other people's burdens, and how many fucking holy shit, that's like all of my relationships, right? Yeah. We carry all of their burdens. And we silence our own truth just to stay in that connection. Everything's fine. It's fine. I'll do whatever I need for you. But that's like, it's tiring.
It is.
You know, and, you know, you don't have to, no longer do you have to hold that and earn that love.
Right.
And it's just unfair. So I do want to give encouragement that these are not fixed behaviors, and being anxiously attached does not mean that you're actually broken. You're really not. You've always cared deeply, and your capacity to love is a gift. And the work now is to bring love home back to you.
That is super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that we are going to get into the healing tools for each specific insecure attachment in a little bit, but I do actually have a question for you.
I don't want it.
I know you don't, but I think that some of the listeners may be able to take this and go with it. You know what I mean? So,
that's fine.
Okay. So here's my question. What does it feel like to not get the reassurance when you need it? And how do you usually cope with that silence?
That's tough. Because reassurance, obviously being a core need,
right,
that I need, when I don't get that reassurance, it definitely feels like abandonment and rejection in that moment. And it's really like, it's like I'm in a room, right? And all the lights are on.
Liz is like, where is this going?
No. She, you said rum.
I said rum?
You said rum.
Like, oh. Where's the rum?
Oh.
But why is the rum going?
That's,
it was cute.
Go ahead. Johnny Depp. Okay, so it feels like I'm in a room with my partner. All the lights are on. We're having a deep conversation. And then all of a sudden, in the moment where I feel like, oh, that hurt a little bit, or I need you to kind of clarify that, he walks out the room, turns off the lights. I'm still standing there going, what the fuck?
Right. Hello, motherfucker.
Right. So if I'm in a moment, I'm like, I need you to let me know in that specific moment that you're in it with me and that we're going to figure this out together.
Right.
So that's where I feel like that comes into play. However, if that reassurance is met with silence, boy, boy.
Hit me with the silence, Dream, and I please, I beg you.
Yes. I used to chase. I absolutely would send 1,000 messages of going, I don't understand why the fuck you're doing this to me. Like, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. And then try to over-explain myself. Yep. Or I would completely withdraw and go cold. Yep. Mm. Now, I give it space. And I think about what I want to say. Like, I had a situation last week where I was bothered by something. And it was silence. Because I felt like in that moment, I was being vulnerable back to a message that was left on read for almost 12 hours. So, okay, you want me to listen to you, but I have nothing to say back that's valuable that you can answer to? No. I gave it space and I was like, you know what? Old me would have been like, I don't know why the fuck. But I just gently goes, I wrote back and I said, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm not holding space for something that wasn't meant for that. And I'm like, okay, that's how I'm dealing with silence now. I'm upholding my boundaries, realizing my self-respect. I'm not completely withdrawing. I'm leaving it open for clear communication because right now we're on the space to being secure.
And I just want to say, and I don't mean this in like a facetious way, but I am really proud of you for that. Because I know that right there showed your growth. Because before you would have sent 101 messages back to back to back and you would have been freaking out and you wouldn't have handled that silence very well. Mm-mm. And to see the difference in how you're coping with things now and realizing, you know what, these are my boundaries. I'm going to say what I have to say after that. If that's it, then fine. Then I'm not going to make time for you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Very much. Much appreciated.
So I have a follow-up question for that because I find it very intriguing, like the way you do your healing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish I could mirror it, but I don't have that kind of strength. It's just not going to happen.
No, babe.
So what do you need during conflict that you're afraid to ask for?
That kind of ties, you're exactly right, because it kind of ties into everything that I was saying about needing that reassurance in that moment. I need co-regulation. So I definitely need someone to go, again, I'm in this with you. Let's solve this together. Because you know what that also shows me? That shows me that you're also in a secure attachment. And I don't need someone who's avoidant. I don't need someone who's anxious. Mm-hmm. And I don't need someone who's going to run every time there's conflict.
Right.
We all go through our own problems. We all have issues. It's who you want to show up for and how you want to show up for them.
Right.
So I definitely need co-regulation.
Right.
I think that there's nothing wrong at the basis of asking that anyway, because that shows a secure attachment.
Correct. I agree.
Like, period. That's a secure, that's something, that's a loving relationship.
I was going to say, and it also shows that you're in a relationship that's worth fighting for.
Yeah.
Because if you're not doing this with your partner, what are you doing?
You're not healing.
What's the point of it?
Correct.
You're just living day to day with somebody.
That's right.
For what outcome?
A lot of pain.
Exactly. Right.
No, really. And frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And leaving you to go, but why?
Like, is it worth it in the end?
Exactly. And here's my thing. I'm at the point in my life that I'm like, if you're not working on yourself actively, don't come to me.
Yeah, you have
to. You either come correct or do not come at all.
Right. They have to be on your level.
100%. And if I'm this far ahead of the game, again, if you don't come correct, you do not come at all.
I agree.
Preach.
And I think what it comes down to is, and I know I can speak for all of us in this, but we have spent too many years in too many relationships with not getting what we're looking for.
And trying to fix them.
Yeah.
And I'm done.
Yep.
We're done.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Mm-hmm.
So bear with me real quick, because before we jump into like a dismissive avoidant, I have a question, and it's like been running through my head as I've been listening to us all talk. Theoretically, if it starts in childhood with your attachment style, wouldn't each child go through every attachment style? Like they start off as anxious, and then once they get done with the anxious portion, then they would go to avoidant, or then they would go to fearful, or whatever the case is. Like, I feel like, because me personally, I feel like I have gone through literally every single attachment style just in the time that I spent with my mother.
Right. I can see why you would feel that way, but let me kind of like break it down for you, so just follow me, right?
Okay.
So your attachment style starts from basically birth, right? So that 0 to 2 window.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to form from how your parents treated you from the day you were born until you're 2 years old, right? Like, I mean, of course, there's more that comes after that, but that is the core of it, right? So either you're going to be secure, or you're going to be avoidant, or you're going to be anxious, or you're going to be fearful avoidant, right? Now, in your situation, right, from your childhood as you were growing up, you said that you felt like you're all three, right? But fearful avoidant is literally a smack dab middle, like cut in half between anxious and avoidant. Okay. So for you, you're listening to, well, I felt anxious. I felt those things and I feel the avoidant, right? You're feeling that because I believe at one point you were 100% when you were a child, you were fearful avoidant. Okay. But the one thing I don't think we've really even talked about was in this is that as you get older, once you separate, because see, when we get into a relationship with a partner, mm-hmm. they kind of take our attachment from our parents, our caregivers, and we now put that same attachment that we had for our parents onto our partner.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So in that, I think, and especially through, again, it's still conditioning. As you're going through relationships, you had a learned behavior to recondition yourself to be more of an avoidant than just a fearful avoidant, where you kind of have that like, fuck you. Mm. You showed me that I'm like shameful. I'm this, I'm that. Right. And so you've become more avoidant because in any point we can work on changing it. And through what do you call it? Negative, you know, repetition or positive repetition can change your style of attachment.
Right.
So that's really what it comes off of.
And let me lean in on that thought. Let me just piggyback and go, when we get into relationships, we find, unless we fix our attachment style, we find people who feel familiar and like home.
Right.
So remember last episode, we were talking about like the inner child wounds, right? And how they showed up and how we do things and how we go back to familiar. I have a hard time saying this, familiarity. Unless we fix that attachment style.
Right.
So I think that you picking, well, all of us picking the partners that we do is solely based off of that 0 to 2 years old until we fix it. And then we build from that. So it depends on where they show up and how they show up and then how they kind of re-interject and rewire to a secure attachment.
That makes sense.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Somewhere in my brain it does. It's just... like, I'm just like, it's one of those epiphanies that you have when you're like listening to somebody talk and you're going, huh, well, that's funny.
But I also
remember feeling that way.
Right. And I also feel that like from the attachment styles that you felt with your mother growing up, I feel like that came with time, not just those 0 to 2 years old.
Right.
And that's where it's really starting to wire. That's exactly where it starts to wire. Yeesh. Neuroplasticity. That's what it was.
Well, with that being said,
yep,
let's go ahead and call myself out.
Do it, baby.
Let's go ahead and yep. We're gonna dive in.
We're about to dive in.
Dismissive avoidant. Holy cow, man. Let's go ahead and talk about us as us dismissive avoidance show up in life. Get into it. So some of our core traits are we are emotionally distant and self-reliant.
No way.
We suppress or ignore our own attachment needs. We often value independence over closeness. We avoid emotional intimacy and vulnerability. And we can also appear confident, but underneath, we may feel unworthy of love. So developmentally, it originates when in childhood, your caregiver was emotionally unavailable, or they were rejecting or dismissive of your needs as a child. You learn that it's safer to rely on yourself, and then you shut down with all emotional needs. Your common, this, I love this, your common coping strategy. If I don't need love, I can't be hurt.
It's true, though.
It is very true.
Can't hurt me if I don't hurt you. That's a little voice in my head. That's what it sounds like. She has a lisp, too.
Get with me.
The sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. The adult version.
Yeah.
Whips and chains excite me.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. I don't know what's happening. Go ahead. I get trigger happy. Go ahead.
So, moving on. In your personal relationships, like your love life, you only prefer a surface level connection and you avoid deeper emotional conversations or connections. You struggle to express needs or feelings. You may shut down or withdraw during any kind of conflict. You feel suffocated often by your partner who seeks closeness. That is also called the black cat mentality.
Ooh. I'm over here going, oh, I did that.
Yeah. That's me. You also tend to pull away when your relationship gets too emotionally intense. Why are you feeling what you're feeling right now? It's too much. You're done.
You're done.
So, common behavior, because I'm going to go ahead and call myself out right now. Ghosting, stonewalling, or becoming cold during arguments. Tis me. Here I am. Keeping people at an arm's length, especially if you're thinking in the emotional or physical aspect. You have a difficult time saying I love you or opening up. You downplay the importance of relationships, as I joke and laugh through this entire fucking thing.
Ain't that right?
And you prioritize work, hobbies, or independence over the connection that you have with your partner.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Here we are.
I'm learning a lot.
So, like me as a person, who is a dismissive avoidant, you appear confident but also feel misunderstood and you're emotionally numb. Good portion of the time. You may fear being controlled, trapped, or engulfed in anything that is involving you or that you are asked to be involved in. And your unconscious belief is, I don't need others and others can't be trusted. So my communication style is, I avoid vulnerability. I've said that multiple times this season and last. I don't ask for help. I interpret emotional needs as weakness, both in myself and others. I don't like seeing other people cry. And I'm like, can you suck it up? I'm one of those rub some dirt in it people.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
Yeah, you are.
I am like, are you done? Are you done feeling?
You're so that person.
And I hate being that person. I do. But also at the same time, like, why are you crying because they didn't put fucking whipped cream in your coffee?
I feel called out. I'm just kidding.
Because I asked for it. I feel like I'm not being heard.
You're heard and seen.
And you're validated. Jesus. And your discomfort with, I can't even talk because of how uncomfortable I am with this. I have a huge discomfort with heavy emotional conversations.
Yeah, you do.
Hence why during most of the podcast, when it gets heavy, you hear me not at all because I get very quiet.
She's like, I don't like these episodes.
I don't like
it's too much. I don't like being vulnerable. I don't like talking about my feelings.
No, I'd rather just be like, ha, let's laugh it off. And everybody's like, no, let's go just ahead play and get game to the of core would you of rather. It. Like, oh, just fuck off. I shut down emotionally or physically and I remove myself from any kind of conflict. I need space to regulate my emotions, but I don't communicate that when I need it. I just kind of up and go.
Mm-hmm.
I just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I become very sarcastic, dismissive, and cold during a conflict.
No, not you.
I call you out. Why are you being a bitch? Why did your mother have you? You know, like I go Ooh. For the jugular.
Yeesh.
You know, your mom
should have swallowed you, bitch.
Yeah. You should have ended up on the fucking couch. I don't know.
Oh my God.
And the also, like the last thing is like, conflict feels threatening to me. It feels threatening to like the sense of my autonomy. Like it's fight or flight. No fucking joke. Like it could be over the smallest thing. And I'm just like, oh, here we are at this crossroad again. And I'm in fight or flight mode.
That's really constantly. Sad. That's emotional. That's like prison.
Yeah. Yep.
Honey.
I feel bad for you.
I know.
I mean, so does everybody who knows me. So it's fine.
Well, we love you.
I do love you.
Listen. There's no shame. You are one of us. Okay. We appreciate you.
As I sit
your
here,
senior and your validated.
As I sit here in my bluey shirt that says, I need 20 minutes alone where nobody
comes near me. It is so you.
It is 100%. That's a perfect. Did you wear that on purpose today?
No, I did not.
That's crazy.
She just put it on.
I just put it on.
She's like, I'm going to grab the shirt.
That's fucking perfect.
So obviously, you being in your little emotional prison, I would like to ask you a question.
Okay.
What's something that you wish people understood about the way that you protect your peace?
Well, honestly, not everything is meant with attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes I protect my peace by just not saying anything because it's not meant to. Not everything needs an answer. Not everything needs your attention. You don't want to talk to me? You don't want to text me back? You want to read my message and not say anything back? Okay. That's on you. But when you need me later, don't come calling.
Oh,
God. And that's how those are my boundaries. That's how I protect my peace, because I am not going to get angry any longer over things that I cannot control.
That's so powerful. I wish I had some of that.
I'll give you some.
I think I'm trying, but I think that that's very powerful, because I think that leaves you not to be an emotional doorstep to people.
Oh, I used to be. And then you get to that point where you're tired of it.
Yeah.
And you're exhausted. And you're exhausted with everybody being like, oh, you're such a bitch. You know, like, why do you have to be that way? Okay, well, now you don't have to hear anything I say. You have to earn that coming from me.
Oh, I have a follow-up question with this one then. Because I feel like that leads into a little bit of emotional unavailability.
Mm.
So I want to ask you this. In those moments, what does too needy feel like to you? And has someone ever said you were emotionally unavailable?
So I've never had anybody come out and directly say she's emotionally unavailable or you are emotionally unavailable. No. But I have too needy to me is when they want all my attention and I'm either busy or I just am not in the mood to be chatty Cathy at the moment. And they're just like, but what are you doing? And you just asked me that question 5 minutes ago. You know, I'm doing the same thing I was doing 5 minutes ago.
Right.
That's too needy to me. You know what I mean? I thought Valerie was feeling called out. I'm sorry.
No, okay. I have something to add to that, but keep going.
Okay. Or like you need my attention 100% of the day, but you also realize that I'm a mom. It's not going to happen. It's not a reality that's going to be happening there.
Right.
I can separate my time between my child and you, but you also need to understand his needs come first.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So like too needy to me is like, because I can't do the stage five clingers. I can't be with somebody that's up my ass 24/7. I need my space. I want you to have your space. I want us to come together at a common ground at a common time. Whenever that is, if it's every single day, that's great. But also give me my time alone with my people.
Right.
You are a poster child.
For dismissive avoidance.
Like legit. But here's a follow-up question. Now, I do know that obviously your son is important, like your mom.
Mm-hmm.
That takes precedence over everything. But let me ask you another little insight. When you... I feel like sometimes avoidant people make themselves purposely busy to not be around other people and get that connection. Do you feel that you do that? Like you purposely dive yourself into other things to avoid that connection?
I feel like in the past I did. I don't feel like I currently do because I'm too old for it anymore.
I got you.
I'm too tired for it. That's I have a 3-year-old that's about to be 4 in a month. I'm fucking exhausted, man.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, in the past, absolutely. They'd be like, hey, you want to come over? No, I got to work. I got plans with so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be out of town.
Right.
And they'd be like, oh, but I really want to see you. I haven't seen you in so long. Well, that sucks. I'm sorry.
Did you ever feel that you had a connection with those people and you were still doing that?
No.
Really?
No. Yeah, no.
Hmm.
Anybody that I've ever had a connection with, I've put that effort in.
See, okay. I feel like as a fearful avoidant, I do. I do that. I'll do exactly what you just said. Like, I can say that I feel like I still to this day do that in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like I do it to avoid people as much as avoid dealing with my own thoughts sometimes. Mm. Where I will keep myself too busy to acknowledge other things that may be important, like my goals or aspirations, yeah, or whatever, which I'll get into in a minute. But I will say that I do that. Like, hearing you ask that question, I was like, oh, should I kind of feel called out? Because I know there are times where I will make myself too busy that I don't have time for myself or others. So that was just, I just wanted to add that in there, because when you said that, I just thought about that. I was like,
Yeah. And I think because I'm total opposite, like if I care about you and I have a connection with you, like if I'm like, my people are my people. So I make room for, Liz is like looking at me like, you said room again. I make room for the people that I care about.
Right.
Well, but I feel, I mean, like other so attachments. No, I know. But like when it comes to like intimacy.
It's a very small circle. Yeah,
right. Right. No, I got you. It's just interesting to hear.
It is.
It's like a cool perception.
It was a good question, by the way. I like that.
Thank you.
Because I think that I didn't think about that until you said that.
Thank you.
Realistically. All right. So let's get into the last one. So the fearful avoidant attachment style. Now, I will start off with saying this isn't something I've just like researched or observed, because I feel like I've been living this literally my whole life. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know it had a name. Honestly, I didn't know it had a name. I just thought it was like being too needy or too much or too guarded or too whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. So, man, this one's rough. Oof. I think learning to understand all this, though, has also helped me feel valid and in healing it through the healing process as well.
You're valid.
If that makes sense. Thank
you. You're heard.
Thanks.
You're seen.
I appreciate that. So fearful avoidant is one of the most emotionally, as we stated before, emotionally intense and complex attachment styles. Now, at its core wound, its biggest one is trust. Mm. And that goes in a lot of different ways. It's not just like, oh, can I trust you or can I not trust you? Okay, so people with this style normally are extremely hyper aware. We read between the lines, the micro expressions, the energy shifts, the body language, the tone, all of it. We notice absolutely every single part of it. And not because we necessarily want to, but because it's how we've learned to protect ourselves. And there's this constant contradiction that we go through where we deeply crave love and connection, but the closer someone gets, the more unsafe it starts to feel. Mm-hmm. And it's a shitty feeling. It's like living in a state of like emotional whiplash, basically, right? So like one minute I'm like, I need you, don't leave me. And then I'm like, wait, you're too close, back the fuck up. And most fearful avoidants, like myself, carry a deep wound of feeling the unworthiness, right? We often feel like we have to prove that we're enough. And I know this is something that I've struggled with for such a long time. So instead, our superpowers that we feel that we have is we are the overachiever, the overcompensator, the overdeliverer, the one that shows up for everyone else, especially in times of crisis and chaos. And that's where we become the rescuer, the reliable one, the fixer. We do all that stuff, which I know I've talked about in past previous episodes about being the fixer, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But in the same breath, we also struggle to express what we need or even ask for help. Because for us, that kind of just feels unsafe and makes us feel vulnerable, because just like the dismissive avoidant, we have a problem with vulnerability as well. In relationships, we tend to like polarize the attachment of our partner, right? So if that makes sense, like if we're with someone that's anxious, we become avoidant. Mm-hmm. And then because you are one and the same, right? Like I said earlier, we are that split between being anxious and avoidant. So anxious people get the avoidant side of us, and the avoidant people get the anxious side of us.
That is, I have seen that live and living color in you.
Yeah. And you know what? It sucks, because it is a cycle of fear and confusion. Mm-hmm. That's really truly what it comes down to, because we're constantly just trying to find safety without knowing exactly what it feels like. We tend to bottle up our emotions while expressing to others to just get it. You know what I mean? Like we expect everybody else to just get what our feelings are. But, you know, no one's a mind reader. But we think it in the moment. We're like, you should just already know. And when they don't, the pressure builds and we end up erupting. And that's where it becomes a problem, because our emotional outbursts are filled with harsh, harsh words. And not because we're really trying to hurt anyone, but because we've been holding on to this pain for so long. Mm-hmm. Our comfort zone tends to be chaos. It's a shitty thing, but it really truly is. It's what we know, though.
Not your house of 75 people.
No, not my house. And it's what we're good at, though. I'm just saying.
I know.
That chaos is what we know. Chaos.
Listen,
obviously none of us can speak today.
No.
I'm just going to say that right now.
Sure cannot.
Chaos is what I was actually trying to say in the moment. but we tend to just be really good in that. And that's why so many of us, fearful avoidance, excel in high stress roles, also in fast-paced careers. We thrive in environments where others would fall apart. Normally, we're the big entrepreneurs that are really successful. Not me, per se, as well. But, you know, we're working there.
Proud of you.
But the cost and normally the casualty is our emotional and well-being. Mm-hmm. We often lie to ourselves. That was a big one. We say yes when we mean no. We say it's fine when it's really not, while putting others first, and then wonder why we're the ones feeling drained and unseen. Mm. We can be control freaks. Not me. Mm. Me never. Like, I am never a control freak. I don't know what you're talking about when it comes to ourselves, but because we always try to do it all and we struggle to trust others. That's really, again, where that core wound comes in, is because we struggle to trust others to show up for us. So instead, we just try to do it all and disconnect our own needs and emotions until we basically just break down or burn out. Mm-hmm. But I do want to be clear about one thing. Fearful avoidance, just as you said about the anxious, and it goes the same for a dismissive, we are absolutely not broken. Okay. I'm just going to point that out right off the bat, because we are, at our core, very sensitive, very intuitive, very empathetic, very powerful. Our attachment style is just a survival response. It is not a personality flaw. And while it can be painful, it also means we have the capacity for incredible growth, deep empathy, and meaningful connection. That's the best part of this, is once we start learning how to trust, everything else just falls into place.
So let me ask you this. Okay. With all of that that you just said, mm-hmm. what do you believe someone will find if they get close to the real you?
Ooh. I think if I had to let someone in too close, now this is past talking, right? In that moment, I feel like if I let them in on the real me, and they would actually find out how fragile I was. Mm. I think that's really, truly what it comes down to. So instead, I used to always just joke and poke fun and just try to take over and take care of everybody else to kind of, so that nobody's seen that. But underneath, there was just kind of this little girl who really didn't want anybody to see the cracks or crevices that I was working so hard to fill in. So I think that for me is probably what it was, is I just didn't want to seem as too emotional, too needy, to all the different things that made me feel weak, if that makes sense.
Who hurt you?
Ooh.
No, like, really, like,
enough time in this episode.
I know, but seriously, like, it falls into, like, that's really emotionally, like, driven right there.
Yeah.
Who was the first person to hurt you, and, like, how did that shape you?
I hate to say this, because I absolutely love him, but my father, if I'm being 100% honest, without question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just a little girl. I was begging for him to choose me, and instead I kept feeling like I was watching him choose everything but me.
Mm-hmm.
Other women, alcohol, freedom, and that kind of shaped everything around that. I learned early on that love could mean abandonment.
Yeah.
And that was a hard thing, because when in that moment I needed someone the most, it wired me to believe I had to work for love. I had to prove myself. I had to be less emotional just to get breadcrumbs for attention. And now even when people show up with good intentions, there's still a part of me that would struggle to trust I would last, because it felt for me like I was waiting for them to do what my dad did to me, and that was disappear.
That's powerful.
Oof, that's rough, though.
That is. And I mean, no offense. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. Like, if my dad's listening, I just, I'm being real. That's
it's all. Honest.
It is.
It's not, you're not being malicious when you say that. You're being honest.
Yeah. And I realize, listen, I don't know his attachment style. I'm going to go with avoidant. But I think he had a lot of emotional wounds that he just, I'm realizing some people aren't meant to be parents.
Yep.
No matter how much they try.
Yeah, this
and
is.
And it doesn't mean that they're not worth being loved or anything like that. I think that he struggles with closeness.
Yeah.
So in turn, it affected me. So
I think acknowledging all of this is so important for us to really realize. And honestly, I feel like it puts on a, like an empathetic lens on other people instead of just being angry. Mm-hmm. And that's where healing starts.
Yeah.
That's exactly where the healing starts.
I think it's a part of growing up and realizing you can't always just blame everybody else for your problems. I mean, yes, I can tell you where it came from,
mm-hmm.
but I can't be mad at them for it. Like, as parents, and I'm realizing this now as my kids are getting older, we're all human.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes, and we're not going to do everything right. And there's going to be times that you're going to hurt your kids without realizing you're hurting them.
Right.
You know? And I think that's the realization it took me becoming a parent, because before it was just like, why am I not enough for you? Why can't you just love me for who I am? Why do you want to choose everything? Like, here I am screaming, begging for you to be a part of my life, and you don't want to be a part of my life.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause that's how it felt. But I realized, like, there's just too much distance. And I think I know one of my biggest flaws, and I think my dad, I got this from my dad, was the fact that, like, when I ghost someone, right? And if I ghost for too long, I will keep ghosting even if I want to reach out, because I now feel shame.
Yep.
And I feel like I've done wrong, and now I don't know how to come back from that.
And
until they reach out to you.
Absolutely.
Right. But even in then, you still hold on to that shame a little bit.
Yep.
So
I've seen that pattern a lot in people.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
It's shitty.
It is.
But it's life.
It is.
'Tis life. So we wanted to touch on the fact that, again, we talked about how these beliefs and these insecure attachments are not fixed beliefs. They can be healed. So I kind of just want to touch on the healing journey to a secure attachment and what we've all been doing individually to get to that secure attachment. So if you're my anxious people, right? So if you're someone who you've ever felt like you care too much, you feel too deeply, you overthink, you spiral in endless loops that you can't seem to calm, and you panic over the very moment that someone wants space, you're not crazy, baby. You're the one carrying the anxious attachment deep in your nervous system, but please understand that you hold the power to heal it, because living in that awareness just means absolutely nothing if you don't do anything to fucking fix it. Cool. You named it. Move on. Again, these aren't fixed beliefs, and I want you to know that if you're listening to any of these and you go, yeah, that's me, and just move on, I want you to choose better and do better. So here's how to help yourself. Give yourself the grace right back to you, from one anxious sister to another, or brother. And if you're a dude listening to this podcast, I'm giving you daps. Let's fucking go.
I'm glad you finished that statement.
Let's fuck go.
I was like, holy fuck, Valerie.
No. All right, number one, I want you to pause before reacting. And I know that this one is hard when you're having a literal nervous system overload, but please do me a favor. Please pause. There are moments in my past relationships or situationships that I was triggered with the lack of response. And instead of trigger texting, I gave it space. I talked about that. I gave it almost 12 hours. You made it almost 12 hours. And then I would allow myself to figure out what it really was in that moment that I was needing. Did I need connection? Did I need to be seen? Do I need to be heard? Do I need to be validated? What was it that I needed? So I give myself the space that I was able to figure that out and really figure out what I wanted to say back to that silence while still upholding my self-worth and what I needed. Or I just gave it silence. It depended on the situation. So pausing before you do anything is very important. Number two. This is huge for my anxious ones. I need you to stop over-explaining yourself to earn safety and let your truth stand without performing. I used to send long, drawn-out text messages explaining my heart and my intentions. All of this was when someone was giving me absence. It's so cringy. And if this is you, I want you to stop and send short, grounded responses, or again, nothing at all. Allow yourself to take the space that you need. Because
that's important.
Dude, for real. Texting someone over and over again, explaining your heart. I know, but also when they're sitting there just being silent to you, it's cringy. Like, to think back at the things that I've done, it's just disgusting. Number three, I want you to give space without spiraling. And the one thing about this one is that it really is easier said than done. But hear me out when I say this. When I felt the shift with my ex before we split, we talked about this in last season, or when I was kind of ghosted recently, it didn't mean that I didn't catch myself spiraling, but I'm learning to build stronger emotional safety within myself. So when you do the same, it looks like this. Label it without shame. So pretty much go, I'm pissed, I'm annoyed, I'm triggered, I'm hurt, I'm confused, whatever the fuck the case may be. But given what I've been through, it's normal to feel that. Shame, it just feeds the spiraling. Naming it with compassion, it regulates that. So guess what I did instead of text, call, or fix it? I said, where can I put this feeling? So guess what I did? I called Jessica.
At least you put it somewhere else.
No, I did. Or I put it into a voice memo. I threw it into chat to talk it through. And every single one of those moments were wins to me. Because really, when you spiral, but you pause halfway through, even if you reached out, but stopped yourself from begging that person for your attention, or even if you cried, but didn't lose yourself in the shame, congratulations, my love. That's progress.
That is progress.
Okay. So we're not shaming ourselves anymore. And last one that I have for you, last but definitely not least, choosing ourselves first feels so selfish. Like, I know how selfish that seems for someone who's anxious. Like, almost like we're leaving someone behind for the sake of ourselves. That's disgusting. That doesn't feel right. But this is where your power lies. This is the difference between self-love and self-sacrifice. Choose yourself, even in the sheer heartbreak. Learn to trust yourself again, to show up for yourself, so you can come back home to yourself and stop choosing other people's hearts as your home. Every single time that I let go of a misaligned connection, I held a boundary, I sat with the discomfort, or I chose to go inward to do the work, I literally chose myself and so can you. Okay. Honestly.
And that's powerful. And I think those are great, great tips.
Thank you.
And tools to help someone heal.
I agree. It helps. It's not easy.
Especially for the anxious ones.
No, really. It's not easy, but I promise you it helps.
So where are all my dismissive avoidants at? I know you're here somewhere in the crowd listening. Go ahead and turn your radios up or turn your volume up and, like, let's go ahead and listen.
Or they ghosted.
If you ghosted, motherfuckers, I'm going to be highly pissed because I'm going to ghost you right back.
That's fine.
So our tools, or the tools that have helped me in my journey so far, practice naming and sharing any kind of feeling, even if it's just you're saying, I'm overwhelmed. I've used that one recently a lot. And it's like, admitting is the first step. Like, if you just say, I'm overwhelmed, it helps you process your feelings and regulate your feelings for other things that are going on throughout that moment. So that helps me personally. I push myself to stay present when people are offering any kind of intimacy, whether it's a hug or somebody just, like, coming up and saying, hi, how you doing? And I'm just like, get the fuck away from me. But now I'm smiling back at them and I'm like, I'm great. How are you? Hmm. Instead of just walking away and being like, I didn't fucking see you. Because it feels unnatural for me for people to always be nice, which is why, again, I don't like fucking clowns. Full circle moment, guys. Full fucking circle, okay?
Our loyal listeners will know that came from season one.
Yes, we're back, bitches. Let yourself be inconvenienced emotionally. It's okay to need, but it's also okay to be needed. And I think, like, personally, becoming a mom helped me learn to be okay to be needed. Because before I was like, you can fucking do it yourself. Until you have a tiny human in front of you going, okay, well, you can't really do that yourself. So here, let me help you. And it's okay to be needed. It's not that it's not emotionally draining sometimes. But those are the moments that you go, hey, I need help. Help me. Yep. Help me, I'm poor.
Help me, I'm poor.
And I've learned it takes a village. So that, I think, full circle moment, I think becoming a mom has made me learn that I need to be less dismissive and more secure in my attachment styles. Because it's made me learn to stop and pause and realize that, yes, my feelings are valid, but also I need to allow people to come in to help me to work through my emotions.
Aww.
I love that.
So,
aww.
I'm so proud of you.
Don't cry.
I'm going.
Also, some other tools that I've heard have helped, but it's not for me because I'm not a journaler. I'm not one of those people that writes all my feelings down, i.e. Jess and Valerie, more Valerie than Jess.
Calling us out.
Oh, I am. But if you like to journal, ask questions like, why does vulnerability feel unsafe? Or what am I trying to protect by pulling away? Those are all valid questions that you need to ask yourself to hold yourself accountable for what you're going through and what emotions you're feeling at that moment. So healing is not linear. And I would just like to point out that though all three of us have sat here and talked about our healing journeys and how each one of us has progressed more than the other, some of us, just us three, are further along in their healing journey than the others. And it's just, if you're not in the same space that we are, please don't doubt that you're not going to make it there. Mm-hmm. Because you have to work on you. You have to put the effort in. Listening to us, yes, it's great. We offer tools. We make you laugh. But you will get there eventually when you make the progress and you put the work in to heal yourself.
That's where it's important.
Yep.
It's literally putting one foot in front of the other.
It starts somewhere.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of work and it doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, there's moments where I'm sure you guys have think that you took 2 steps forward and you took 15 steps back. Yep. I get it. I totally get it. But that's where you have the tools to reground yourself and go, okay, I'm human. I'm going to have these moments. I'm going to feel like I'm spiraling. Okay. That's okay. It's what you do with that in that moment.
Don't be so harsh on yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And there's definitely going to be moments where you're going to feel like you are more healed than you thought you were. Mm. And then something's going to ground you down and go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe here I'm not as healed as I thought I was.
Yep. Yep. And always take that. And I'm always the person to go, you know what? Thank you for showing me that.
Yeah.
Humbling. You get humbled quite often when you're healing and on your healing journey. And you get humbled by people that you didn't even think you were going to be humbled by.
That's so correct.
So just, it's not always pretty. It's not always fun. It's not always a happy time. But boy, let me tell you, when you reach that road where you are 1,000% healed and ready, life is beautiful.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to get to that point.
Seriously.
100% cannot wait to get to that point. Because I know for me, I feel like a lot of times I don't realize how much healing I still have left to do mm-hmm. and how much healing I've already done until I'm like really sitting down thinking about it. And there's a lot of times where going through this process, like she just said, it's not easy, right? So there's times that when you're trying to work on yourself and you're going through healing that you're going to be way more emotional with like crying and just like feeling the feels that you're feeling that like it can be hard sometimes to do, mm-hmm. but I'll tell you what, getting through those raw emotions is how you know you're still moving forward.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and dive in with my fearful avoidance, shall we? Hope you're still listening. So number one for me, which was a really big thing, is you guys have to stop abandoning yourself. Mm. I did this for so long and I used to twist myself up trying to fix broken people, hoping they'd see my worth. And now it came to the point that I realized it's not my job to heal anyone. I had to set my boundaries. I had to learn to say no and I had to protect my peace. And that in itself has been absolutely life-changing. Mm-hmm. The next one is you have to let yourself feel instead of fleeing. Fear used to make me freeze or run. That was like the two. It was either I fleed or I would freeze in the moment and be like, I don't know what to do, right? Mm-hmm. But now I pause, just as we've all stated. It's that pausing and sitting in it and then asking yourself what you're really afraid of. And if I had to answer honestly, that's how you know you're healing.
That's right.
Is answering that honestly. I don't run from the discomfort anymore. I'm learning from it. Another one is stop pushing away good love. That is a really big one, right? Because for me, I used to create stories in my head, like I've talked about, I think, in the last episode. When something felt too good, like it was just going to be temporary, right? With Eric, I didn't run, though. I chose to stay. So with that, I allowed myself to receive love that once I thought I didn't deserve. The next one is I let people see the real me. So vulnerability, guys, it used to feel like a trap.
It is.
But now I lead with it. I do. Whether it's writing letters to the inner child or being raw on this podcast, I have learned to show up fully, even in the really messy moments of it.
I'm stuck in a glass case of emotion.
Brenda. I now, this is a big one. I want you guys to start valuing consistency, not only in yourself, but in others. I used to crave the chaos because it was familiar. And in that now I'm craving stability, which is a wonderful thing to start craving. Mm. And also peace, because people start showing up for you the same way every time when you do that. And you have to also let them in the same way. I've anchored myself in safe relationships. This is a big one.
Yes, okay. You have.
Stop going for the toxic people, whether it's relationships, friends, family, whatever the situation is. With my friendships, I've built something that feels like home. It's not always perfect, but it's safe. And that showed me what a secure attachment felt like. And this is the blueprint of how I show up for my kids and my partner and myself now. In the last one, which is extremely, or like the number one most important one to me, is you have to reparent yourself.
Yep.
100% you have to reparent yourself. Absolutely. I know we talked about in the last episode, but let me go over it again. You need to be reparenting yourself, right? To that inner child. This is the most powerful part. You have to stop blaming that person. You have to stop blaming yourself, right? You have to start loving yourself. You have to start talking to yourself and reminding yourself that you're safe and that you don't have to perform to earn love anymore. And she just gets to be that person. That's so what it comes down to.
Powerful.
So with that being said, if you ever felt like you're too much, too distant, too scared to trust, you're not alone, but you're also not stuck. Best part is secure attachment is not a fantasy. It's not just for people who had a good childhood. It's something we can learn and something we can become. So if no one's told you lately, you are worthy of love and it doesn't hurt.
Aww. That's powerful. Thank you for sharing those tools. I think that it's so incredible how an avoidant can go from, well, a fearful avoidant can go from just being so scared of love to accepting all of those things. That is a powerful movement, and I'm seeing a lot of growth in you, and I'm proud of you.
I appreciate that.
You've done a great job.
And I will say there is one more tool that's like a general tool for everybody. I struggle with this one. I don't know that I personally do it myself, but I've heard it does help a lot of people, and that is auto-suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to explain that one?
So auto-suggestion is pretty much the... Okay. So what it does is that it increases the alpha brain waves in this state. So you're going to want to do something like meditate for like an hour.
Or when you first wake up.
When you first wake up. Or the hour before you go to bed. Or if you're like zoned out, we call this like the zoned out portion. Like if you're watching TV or if you're watching a YouTube video in that moment where someone's trying to get your attention, right? And you're zoned in, that is when your alpha brain waves are more active. So in this state, this is when your subconscious gets fed suggestions because your conscious and your subconscious work to fight each other. Mainly 95 to 97% of the time, your subconscious is ruling your emotions. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to feed imagery in those moments to yourself and go, like, start with your core wounds and go, like, if I'm abandonment wound, I'm going to go think of a time when I wasn't abandoned. Think about the time that I was seen, loved, heard, validated. Okay. And someone really did show up for me. Your subconscious does not speak in words, so this is why affirmations wouldn't work in this aspect. Your subconscious works in emotion, repetition, and imagery. So you're going to picture a time of someone coming into your life and staying and doing something. And you're also going to make sure that you feel that emotion of what emotion came with that. And then you're going to pick 10 different things of working on those core wounds. Think about those every single day and do that for 3 weeks. And that'll change your perception.
And what she means by like the 10 things, like take 10 moments, like evidence-based facts of times that you can think of that you didn't feel abandoned or you felt like you achieved something that made you feel good enough or whatever. It's whatever your core wound is. That's what you go off of.
That's right.
So.
Mm-hmm. So I think that would be very powerful because working on the subconscious, I think would really, really, really help.
I agree.
That's where all this comes from.
Amen to that. Well, I hope that you have all enjoyed listening to us giggle like clucking hens and fucking go over all of this and realizing
stuttering Stanleys.
But we love you all and we hope you've enjoyed our podcast.
We're on all
major platforms. We sure are.
Fucking all of them. You know, I think you guys know by now. Just fucking go to all of the things. We're there.
Yeah.
We love you.
We're on 16 different platforms for podcasts. You can actually go to our RSS feed, which is on our Facebook, on our Instagram, and on our TikTok, that you can click on that. And it will lead you to every single one of our platforms that we have our podcasts on. And you can also, we love any feedback, any Please. Listener stories. You can get that at unhingedmemoirs@gmail.com. Send it over to us.
And I just want to let you know, you're seen, you're loved, you're heard, and you're validated. On that note, bye. Bye. Bye.